www.africanow.org.
The talk show Africa Now airs Wednesdays at 1 p.m. It's a modern view on historical issues concerning the entire African world, addressing how African people are participating in globalization, ways in which the rest of the world continues to exploit African resources, uncovering labor violations by corrupt politicians and Western government powers. Learn what's happening now in interviews with artists, activists, scholars, and a host of other experts each episode. Listen Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Africa Now is also available on iTunes Podcast, Google Play Music, as well as SoundCloud, on your station for Jazz and Justice, WPFW, Washington.
Across the board funding freeze, purging of FBI agents without cause, shuttering of a major global humanitarian agency, wiping out civil rights gains and handing over the keys to America's treasury to a couple of unvetted teenagers. And that's just week two. Is our democracy sliding towards an autocracy? Good morning. Good morning and welcome to What's at Stake. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Well, President Trump said he wanted to be a dictator on day one, and it appears many of the actions he and his administration have taken thus far are positioning him to become exactly that. Well, maybe that's too extreme. What is the definition of a dictator? Quote, a ruler with total power over a country. Typically one who has obtained control by force. Okay, so Trump was voted in, so he could be an elected dictator at best. Second definition, a person who behaves in an autocratic way. Okay, so what's the definition of an autocrat? Quote, a ruler who has absolute power, someone who insists on complete obedience from others, an imperious or domineering person. Well, so as it stands, Trump is not a dictator or an autocrat yet. But if he's successful in purging all the career FBI agents that simply did their job in investigating his plethora of crimes, or if he's successful in firing all of the attorneys general who played any role in investigating the January 6th insurrection, if he is successful in completely eliminating the Department of Education, in dictating what children are taught and not taught, if he can shutter a long-standing government agency, the USAID, freeze federal funds across the board and wipe out the entire federal government personnel by offering buyouts or threatening to fire them, he also has Republicans in Congress marching in lockstep with all of his outrageous, possibly illegal actions, claiming a false voter mandate requires him to take these actions, removing any possibility that the Congress, which is supposed to be a checks and balance, will check him. So we have to ask, who's going to check him, boo? And I suspect many of these cases will end up in the same Supreme Court that granted him immunity for official acts acting as president and placing him and other presidents above the law. It leaves the fate of this country in the hands of the voters in 2 years during the midterm elections. A few Trump supporters are already feeling buyer's remorse. In South Florida, where Latinos in Dade County helped elect Trump, Adelis Ferro of the Venezuelan American Caucus says Trump deceived them when he ordered that the temporary protective status would not be renewed in April when it expires. Some 350,000 Venezuelans could face deportation under that ruling.
We voted for Trump in 2016, 2020, and 2024. We live in the Florida panhandle, and we thought that this would be good for our business. But we're finding out now that we were wrong, and I want to publicly say that we are regretting our votes at this point. My husband and me own a construction company, and we literally do not have workers anymore. Most of our workers are from Mexico, and they're good, hard workers. I talked to a few of them, and they said they were just too scared to come back to work because of all the raids. Our construction company is likely to go out of business now, and we don't know what we're going to do, but we're never voting for a Republican again. Ron DeSantis and Trump have been passing laws that negatively affect our business, and I just want to say that I'm sorry for voting for him. I grew up Republican, and it's all I've ever known, but now I can see that me and my whole family have been very wrong about this. So we hope that 2026 comes and we can take back the House and the Senate and stop him from what he's doing. There's a special election coming up in Matt Gaetz's district, and we're going to do everything we can to advocate for a Democrat taking that seat.
That is actually an independent business owner, also in Florida, who voted Republican all her life. We'll hear now from the Venezuelan American who felt betrayed by Trump's actions.
President Doral, Monday, Venezuelan Americans denounced the Trump administration and South Florida Republicans.
More than betrayed. Beyond betrayed. They used us. They actually, during the campaign, and I don't want to make this political, but during the campaign, the elected officials from the Republican Party, they actually told us that it was not going to touch the documented people.
So that was Nacero, who is a American, a Venezuelan American, and she's very disappointed when Trump passed the order that says he will not renew the protective status, temporary protective status for Venezuelan Americans. Two attorney activists are joining us this morning to provide their perspectives on how the people need to respond to this whole political crisis with the Trump administration. Nakima Levy Armstrong is one of the founders of the Target boycott. She's a lawyer and social justice activist. She was president of the Minneapolis chapter of the NAACP from 2015 to 2016. She has led a variety of organizations that focus on issues of racial equality and disparity in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. Levy Armstrong was a professor of law at the University of St. Thomas in Minneapolis from 2003 to 2016. She has been a prominent local activist in several protests over the killing of African Americans by police and has argued lawsuits to prevent Minneapolis from eliminating single-family zoning, arguing that doing so would harm the environment and communities of color. Good morning, Attorney Levy Armstrong. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And also joining us is Portia Allen Kyle, the Interim Executive Director of Color of Change, a digital first organization powered by millions nationwide, leveraging campaigns, organizing, and narrative pressure against government and corporations to act on real solutions for racial justice. She leads the organization's strategic advocacy and day-to-day operations. She previously served as a Biden-Harris administration appointee as senior advisor for equity, policy, and stakeholder engagement in the Office of Civil Rights at the U.S. Department of Transportation. For over 15 years, Portia has spent her career advancing civil rights and civil liberties through a lens of racial equity. Good morning and welcome to What's at Stake, Ms. Attorney Allen Kyle.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And let's start with you, Attorney Allen Kyle. Given your extensive career-long advancing civil rights and civil liberties for Americans, how are you feeling in this moment in time when the DEI diversity, equity, and inclusion programs have been just summarily wiped off the books, so to speak? How big a deal is this?
Yeah, you know, this moment is an interesting one and a challenge. And I think, you know, for me, I am feeling very clear about the work that needs to be done, the work that is left to do, and what's at stake in this moment. The rollback of DEI is not necessarily just about the corporate programs. What is under attack here, you know, by the right wing, by this, you know, administration that is, you know, dead set on pushing this neo-segregationist agenda forward is really attacks on our civil rights progress. There have been so many gains, you know, over the past 60 years in the wake of the civil rights movement, and those have manifested and created opportunities for a number of folks, Black, not even only Black people, but Black, Brown, people who are lower income, women, et cetera, who have all, people with disabilities, who have all benefited from civil rights and anti-discrimination protections. And in this moment, what they're, you know, seeking to do is eliminate all of that progress to, you know, rid us from public life, to, you know, roll back those protections. And it's very clear that we need to do everything in our power to avoid, as best as possible, that happen, but also to affirmatively organize and think about the future we want and do that groundwork, be in relationship, be working towards the longer term vision.
So let's talk a little bit about the DEI. Does it only apply to agencies and companies that receive federal funding? Why are so many companies in corporate America scaling back their DEI initiatives upon Trump's word, upon his order?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think it's important to recognize the role of corporate power and the role of profit and incentives in all of this. You know, it is after, you know, the murder of George Floyd in 2020, companies made a number of commitments, you know, in the moment. Some of those commitments were financial. Some of them, you know, involved, you know, external support and obligations. Some of them were about shifting their internal operations, their, you know, products, their business, creating opportunities, et cetera. But all of those companies, you know, marketed these initiatives, advertised them, and, you know, really made statements externally about, you know, the extent of their commitments to racial justice in this post-Floyd era. And what we've, you know, seen over the past few years is that many companies never lived up to those commitments. Many companies, you know, already began to roll things away. While there are, you know, some companies that have been adamant in their public statements about, you know, maintaining and keeping their programs, I think we have to question the timing of these announcements with the, you know, incoming new administration and whether corporations such as Lowe's, you know, such as Walmart, such as, you know, McDonald's, such as it, like all of those corporations are really making attempts to curry favor with the incoming administration, who has a very clear, you know, pro-segregationist, you know, anti-inclusion, anti-civil rights agenda.
So they're basically kissing the ring. They're not obligated, really, to follow that dictate by President Trump. Some of these corporations is what you're saying.
Oh, in an environment where there is not enough regulation on business and not enough, you know, constraint and rules on power and corporate power in particular, you know, there was an option if they wanted to roll back programs to do it silently, like many companies would have in a previous, you know, socio-political context. But in this, you know, moment, making those announcements, you know, loud and proud, sending out your press releases and your top ranking, you know, staff of color, executives of color to, you know, champion these announcements is very intentional. And I think to curry favor with this administration.
We're going to talk a little bit further in the next segment about Target and its role in all of this and its decision to roll back. But let me ask you, so critics say these education, government, and business programs that single out participants based on race, gender, and sexual orientation are unfair, and that the same opportunity should be afforded to everyone. What's your response to that, Attorney?
Yeah, you know, there's a saying that for those who have, you know, perhaps always had the privilege, equality can feel like oppression, right? And I think what we've, you know, the need for many of these programs was because historically, Black people, other, you know, people of color, women, et cetera, have been excluded from these opportunities and they were not open to everybody. And what we have seen, you know, over there is nothing in preferences. What, you know, these programs have functioned to do is to unlock the potential to even compete on merit, which is why, you know, the conversations around merit are so disingenuous and deliberately misleading. What, you know, what folks, and particularly this band of white men who are at the forefront of this kind of neo-segregationist movement, are really recognizing is exactly how much of the positions in power were unearned, you know, how many folks were, you know, unqualified, and that when opportunities are open to everyone, there are many qualified candidates out there who are able to step in and take advantage of those opportunities.
I love the term neo-segregation, segregation environment that we're in now. So Attorney, there's a narrative that DEI initiatives lead to unqualified applicants being placed in jobs that's basically what President Trump alleged with regard to the plane crash last week. Of course, he didn't have a shred of evidence, and it turned out none of the pilots were DEI hires. For the record, though, explain how hires for special skills are made. Are more qualified or more skilled individuals ever passed over in favor of a DEI hire?
No, that actually is not what these programs mean at all. And I think the irony coming from an administration that, you know, on the whole is vastly unqualified for the roles that, you know, they are occupying. We have a, you know, Secretary of Transportation that is a, you know, former reality TV star. We have a president that's a former reality TV star. We have, you know, a number of folks in these roles who are coming in. We have teenagers that are, you know, somewhat accessing and taking over, you know, and, our sensitive private data and, you know, infiltrating agencies. And so, you know, wanting to debate the lack of qualification and unearned access, you know, unearned access is a unelected, unappointed, unconfirmed shadow president who is dictating what's, you know, happening with the rest of our government and, you know, looking to take over our, and sink our democracy. When under inclusive policies, when hires are happening, all that folks are doing is looking at a broader array of qualified candidates and making the best decision.
Mm-hmm. And so scrapping the DEI initiatives is just one of a number of radical executive orders signed over the past 2 weeks. Does Trump have the authority to shut down government agencies like the USAID that was the world's largest provider of humanitarian aid? Does he have constitutional authority to shut it down without congressional approval?
No, he shouldn't, right? And that, you know, is, well, number one, why every step of the way they keep being sued and, you know, in many cases, these injunctions keep being awarded. But number two, you know, I also think it's important to recognize that we are not in normal times. I mean, the right knew that on the facts and on the basis of longstanding precedent and law, they would, you know, not be able to move much of their agenda every step of the way. Mm-hmm. It's why it was important for them to, you know, illegitimately capture the courts in so many different ways, you know, to capture the Supreme Court in different ways. And so, you know, should the president have the authority to do this? No, but we've also seen that the Supreme Court is willing to make up, you know, judicial doctrine to justify the actions, you know, that otherwise would, you know, based on widely recognized and acknowledged precedent and standing, you know, have been unheard of, illegal, and be held accountable for prior to this moment that we're in.
Mm. And there are reports that there are fears that the aid community may actually have been too damaged already to resume work even after the funding is resumed that President Trump froze. So is Color of Change planning a response, a coordinated strategic response to these actions?
Yes, so Color of Change, you know, as a, you know, members-based racial justice organization, we are, you know, constantly running campaigns and in the fight to hold corporations and government actors to account. And in this moment, particularly in this moment of outsized corporate power, you know, we are running campaigns, pushing back on overreach. We are, you know, running campaigns and engaging in a lot of organizing and narrative work that really, you know, make sure that we are, number one, you know, making meaning in highlighting the stories of both the harm and the resistance in this moment, particularly of, you know, our people, our members in Black communities. But number two, you know, as a part of this, like, I almost feel compelled to remind folks that we are about 2 weeks in and we will be fighting for, you know, our lives and for our community for the next 4 years at a minimum, but then we will also have to rebuild, right? And, you know, the harm and the hardships that we face aren't necessarily confined to election cycles. The like harm being done in this moment will be, you know, felt and reverberate for generations. And so it's important for us, you know, as we are wanting to fight back, to also remember that chaos is the strategy and cruelty is the policy. And with that acknowledgement of, you know, what we can expect to come down the administration, also need to make sure that we are taking care of ourselves, taking care of each other, and really bracing ourselves for the slow, long-term work and organizing that we need to do to effectively fight back and, you know, defeat this for once and for all down the line.
I know many Democrats or progressives and apparently some Republicans as well are feeling that it's daunting and feeling impotent in this moment in time. Like there's really not that much that can be done. And I know that all the sociologists and everyone, they say, focus on one thing that you can do and, you know, try and make it better, make a difference there. So, but, you know, the most troubling to me is the fact that Elon Musk has a team of 18 to 20 year olds huddled inside the Treasury Department with the keys and access to the computers and sensitive classified data, possibly plotting ways to shift money from Social Security benefits into Musk's private coffers. I mean, we don't know what they're doing. Musk himself doesn't have security clearance. And of course, neither does his team of teenagers. But I'm wondering, attorney, can a class action lawsuit be filed against him for exposing our private data to risk?
I think, you know, across the board, folks need to be exploring all options. And so there is a, you know, strong set of legal organizations that are on the front lines, you know, fighting the fight, you know, from the ACLU to Public Citizen to the National Council of Nonprofits to, you know, like so many folks who are leading the charge, you know, on the legal front this moment. And I think, you know, and from the looks of it, we should expect to see that fight and that resistance. And across the ecosystem, you know, we will not only, you know, need to be fighting in the courts, but also to, you know, organizing people in communities around how, not only just how atypical and abnormal this moment is, but also, you know, resetting, you know, a new normal and a higher set of expectations for how our government and government actors are supposed to react. And, you know, to your point a moment ago, you know, about what to do in this moment, focus on one thing. I think one of the lessons of maybe the past 50 years is, you know, this ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, right? There are many things across the board that we could have been that could have been done, none necessarily, you know, ground shifting in and of themselves per se, but making decisions on, you know, whether it was codifying Roe, which, you know, was supposed to be on the agenda after Obama was elected, and instead, you know, focused on Lilly Ledbetter was the first act that went through, important act in and of itself. But I think we've, you know, seen what happened to the deprioritizing of, you know, codifying Roe, right? And the consequences there. You know, there have been points in time where we could have enacted privacy regulations and we could have regulated big tech and provided that framework. And, you know, we could have taken action on all of these things that we're seeing and living the consequences of that inaction. And for whatever comes next, whether it is in 2 years in midterms and 4 years for the presidential, in, you know, 16 or 20 years, like what we need to recognize is every step along the way builds into a moment. And this slide into fascism, this, you know, conceding to this neo-segregationist agenda, the, you know, quick decline of our democracy is the product of a number of different choices that we made and didn't make, actions we could have taken and didn't take over, you know, the a very many set of years.
In some way, it almost seems like, it, you know, we're putting emphasis on the midterm elections and putting a lot of hope in that. If, however, Musk and his team of teenagers have access to certain levers and computers, I don't know if that would they're able to interfere with the election voting materials and apparatus. And if so, it almost could be too late to try to put some stops in place. I know the court, and you're an attorney, do you have faith that the courts are going to be able to slow the roll down enough with, you know, with the numerous lawsuits that are being launched and filed to, in order to really try to muck up the works here and slow things down a bit. What are your thoughts about that, Portia, Allen, Kyle?
Yes, I think we need comprehensive strategies. You know, fighting in the courts is one tool in the toolbox, right? We also, you know, need to be fighting at the state and local level. And, you know, there are many places across the country where more is possible. We need to hold our, you know, there are quite a few Democratic trifectas, for example. We need to hold folks accountable to making more possible and offering the protections for those, you know, residents of their states where the federal government won't be providing those for everyone. We, you know, need to be organizing and bringing folks together. And so, you know, politicians, you know, are politicians. They run on cycles and on elections. Black people are people. We live life, you know, at like 24/7, you know, all day, every day. We are not confined. Our experiences are not necessarily confined by an election cycle. So it's important for us, you know, as Color of Change and many of the organizations in the movement and ecosystem to recognize that this is long-term work. We are in it for, you know, the long haul. And to put in that groundwork and legwork that perhaps can supplement what is happening in the courts. But I think, you know, to me, the decision by the Supreme Court on affirmative action a couple years ago really made clear where the like end of a civil rights advocacy strategy that was primarily focused on litigation probably has hit its upper limits.
So I want to read a statement by Representative Sarah McBride, a Democrat from Delaware. She commented recently, piece by piece, department by department, they are working to purge employees, consolidate power, gut programs. Even if they can't get everything immediately through executive fiat, they will decimate the federal government and sell it for parts. No program will be safe, end quote. So I'm going to leave it there. Portia Allen Kyle, the Interim Executive Director of Color of Change, thank you so much for joining us this morning for this important conversation.
And thank you so much for having me.
Next, hundreds of thousands of Black Americans have found one way to strike back. They've set their sights on Target and have aimed straight for the pocketbook. The co-founder of the strike against Target tells us what effect it's having thus far. We'll be back in a minute. Stay with us.
Peace. This is your social justice calendar for the week of February 3rd, 2025. To begin, there will be an Afrocentric book drive from February 1st to February 28th at East City Bookshop. There will be a diverse selection of books to promote literacy and mutual aid in the community. More info can be found at www.eastcitybookshop.com. Then on Thursday, February 6th, from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m., Africa World Now Project and Bloom Bars present the film We Rise for Our Land by award-winning filmmaker Kurt Odabenga Orderson at Bloom Bars, 3222 11th Street Northwest, Washington, D.C. More info can be found on www.bloombars.com. On February 8th at 12 p.m., the event I Have a Dream, Celebrating Black Unity Through Poetry and Dialogue, will take place at Busboys and Poets on 235 Carroll Street, Northwest Washington, D.C. More info can be found on busboysandpoets.com. Finally, in honor of recent events, there will be a Gaza on Our Mind, continuing the ceasefire discussion at Sankofa Video and Books, hosted by Jordan Strudwick. This event will be hosted on Sunday, February 9th, 2025 at 7 p.m. This will be at 2714 Georgia Avenue Northwest, Washington, D.C., and more info can be found on www.sankofa.com. The WPFW Social Justice Calendar connects you with the heartbeat of grassroots activism in the DMV. Submissions can be emailed to socialjustice@wpfw.org. Please include the name, date, and address of the event. Submissions are due by Thursday at 5 p.m., at least 1 week in advance of your event. WPFW's Social Justice Calendar connects, engages, and uplifts our community as we build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
And welcome back to What's at Stake. I'm Verna Avery Brown. And my guest in this segment is attorney Nakima Levy Armstrong. She's one of the founders of the boycott against Target. Attorney Nakima Target. It's a pretty good morning and welcome to What's at Stake.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yes, indeed. So now Target is a pretty popular store amongst African Americans. They even have a nickname for it, Target. And now we're being asked to boycott it. Why? Tell us why, Nakima.
About a week and a half ago, Target issued a statement saying that it was essentially rolling back its commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion. And if you look closer at the statement, they talk specifically about some of the initiatives that they had put forward. One was called Reach, I believe. They also have initiatives that are focused on Black businesses. They said they would no longer complete surveys that measure diversity. And so it really felt like a slap in the face to Black folks and other people of color, of course, women and members of the LGBTQIA community, to see Target, who had been a champion of diversity and multiculturalism and trying to at least look as if they're leveling the playing field, to roll back those initiatives. And we felt that Target essentially was cowering to the Trump administration, because this announcement was made about a day or so after we got word that the Trump administration was sending out memos to federal employees asking them to identify anyone whose job title was somehow connected to diversity, equity, and inclusion. So to see Target fold so quickly was deeply, deeply disappointing and disheartening, and caused us to make a decision that if Target is not going to support its DEI initiatives as it said it would in the past, then we're not going to support Target using our hard-earned dollars.
And, you know, it's interesting. We just learned another thing, that, and you are an attorney as well, so you know that Target was not obligated, or it's not receiving any federal funds. So they really didn't have to do this. You know, they didn't have to respond to that executive order or whatever it was.
Technically, no, they did not have to do this. We have seen some companies that have actually doubled down on their commitment to DEI or diversity, equity, and inclusion. But we do also know that there are Republican attorneys general that are applying pressure to various corporations to try to get them to roll back their focus on diversity, equity, and inclusion. I read an article last week that talked about those same Republican attorneys general that are putting pressure on Costco as we speak to try to get them to justify why they need to continue to focus on diversity, equity, and inclusion. And who knows whether those individuals also put pressure on Target. But the difference between Target and Costco is, again, the fact that Costco is doubling down on its commitment. 100% of Costco's board recommended to its shareholders to not accept a shareholder proposal that would roll back DEI initiatives. Mm-hmm. And 98% of Costco's shareholders made that decision to continue to focus on diversity, equity, and inclusion. So that's a huge shift from what we've seen with Target.
Yes, I heard a report that some of the shareholders in Target were disappointed and said they were not properly informed about the impact that rolling back the DEI might have.
Well, there's a lot of confusion out there about a recent lawsuit that was filed by some conservative shareholders of Target, including a police pension fund out of Florida. Now, what happened was in 2022, 2023, Target had put out some products that that were pro-LGBTQIA. And those products apparently offended some of Target's more conservative customers. And those customers engaged in a boycott of Target beginning sometime in 2023. So the conservative shareholders who filed a lawsuit basically are saying, hey, Target, you didn't inform us of the risk that we could face consumer boycotts, that that could then impact the price of Target stock. And as a result of your failure to inform us about the risks of diversity, equity, and inclusion, we are now suing you. So the lawsuit that's out there is an anti-DEI lawsuit brought by conservative shareholders. Wow. And so now Target has to figure out whether it stands to gain more by focusing and doubling down on DEI or listening to those conservative shareholders and rolling back DEI. And well, that pressure could have been part of the reason that, along with the Trump administration's mandates, could have been a part of the reason that they folded under the pressure.
Now, have you or others that are calling for the boycott been in any kind of dialogue or conversations with Target?
We have not been in dialogue with Target. We said during our press conference last week that we would welcome dialogue with Target, but the starting point for any dialogue or negotiations is Target being willing to reverse its decision to roll back diversity, equity, and inclusion. I saw somewhere online where the national NAACP said they had been in touch with Target, and I'm really not sure why. The national NAACP, to my knowledge, has not been involved in anything related to a Target boycott. So I'm not sure of why Target might have reached out or the end. I don't know, because as far as I'm concerned, they're not involved in this particular action. This action is driven by residents and activists in the state of Minnesota, because Target is a Minnesota-based company. And many of us fought on the front lines for justice for George Floyd and many other victims of police accountability over the course of several years. And in the aftermath of George Floyd being killed, that is when Target rolled out some of its additional areas of focus around diversity, equity, and inclusion, including making a $2 billion commitment. And it's unclear how much of the $2 billion that Target pledged in 2021 and 2022 has actually been disseminated or utilized towards diversity, equity, and inclusion and supporting Black businesses, as well as improving the shopping experience for Black customers.
So and that was a, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
That was a one-time commitment for the $2 billion for Black businesses that Target had committed itself to.
And, from our understanding, yes.
And there's been no update on that as to how much. I did hear on one report that some of it had been spent, but not all of it.
Right, and they haven't put out there how much of the $2 billion was actually spent, which we'd like to know.
Yeah.
You know?
So, your first demand is that they be willing initially to roll back the DEI.
So roll back their decision to reverse. So basically we want them to roll back or reverse their decision to roll back diversity, equity, and inclusion initiative. Okay.
So what other demands are you putting on them? And how would we know when to stop the boycott? You know, there have to be a set of demands so we know that they've, you know, accomplished.
Yeah, that's the first and probably most important demands. And I think the remaining demands that we make would depend upon what additional information Target is willing to release with regard to the promises that it made to the public. And some people may say, hey, well, Target wasn't under any obligation to, you know, provide $2 billion or invest $2 billion, you know, in Black-owned businesses and improving the Black customer shopping experience. However, Target gained a great amount of reputational, positive reputational impact, which then led to many of us seeing Target in a positive light as a supporter of diversity, equity, and inclusion, which for many of us also influenced where we decided to shop. So Target had benefited from looking as if it were a leader in diversity, equity, and inclusion in the aftermath of George Floyd being killed. So now to roll that back is a slap in the face, you know, for many of us. And we feel that Target's commitment may not have been genuine, you know, from day one. It's just now coming to light because of the statement that they made and the political climate that's been created that makes it easy for companies to roll back their commitments to diversity, equity, and inclusion.
So now, so the boycott started officially on February 1st, Black History Month. Was that deliberate? And was Black History Month honored in any special way at Target over the years?
So starting on the boycott on February 1st was intentional on our part, although we know that some people unofficially started the boycott right after Target made its announcement to roll back diversity, equity, and inclusion. But we thought starting on February 1st in the spirit of our ancestors at the start of Black History Month was the best possible time. Now, anyone who is Black and who has gone into Target during Black History Month should be able to remember the beautiful Black History Month displays that Target would have in its store highlighting products by Black creatives. You know, I remember going in, you know, last year, you know, getting, you know, just beautiful sweatsuits and clothing that were offered during that time. So
made by Black businesses.
By Black creatives, Black entrepreneurs. So it really felt like a celebration of our culture going in during Black History Month. One of the things that Target did recently was put out its promotional materials for Black History Month. And there was a video that they posted online, and the comments under the video were brutal. People accused Target of gaslighting Black folks, you know, saying, how dare you, you know, put out this video knowing that we're not shopping in your stores because of you rolling back diversity, equity, and inclusion. So people really ate them alive, you know, in the comments to say, we don't want these promotions and these advertisements about our culture when you're making business decisions that seem antithetical to that.
So how many, so first of all, you're asking everyone to do a total boycott of Target. Some consumers have said, well, you know, I'll just go in and just only buy Black products, be selective and only purchase, you know, products by Black businesses. What's your reaction to that?
So we are encouraging a total boycott of Target stores. Target has 2,000 stores across the United States, and we could make quite the impact and send Target a message that diversity, equity, and inclusion is important to Target's customer base, which again includes a large percentage of people of color. I know that there have been some Black entrepreneurs who have products on Target shelves who have said, hey, clear the shelves. Come in during Black History Month and only buy our products. And some people may be choosing to do that. However, I'm of the opinion that Target does not deserve any of our dollars. And we have the power to buy directly from those Black business owners through their websites or for those who may have stores, et cetera. So we're encouraging people to buy directly from Black vendors. That way Target isn't getting a cut of the proceeds. And we're not being forced to compromise on what is a total boycott of Target. I do not see a partial boycott as being the same and having the same impact as a total boycott. Because the reality is with Target making the decision to roll back diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, they could decide to take those products off the shelf next week, right? Mm-hmm. No, who's monitoring them? Like you said earlier, who gonna check me, boo? That's basically Target's mindset, you know, at this moment, like, hey, we can do what we feel that we need to do for our business. And of course, Target has the right to do that. But as consumers, we also need to do what we need to do for the values that we hold dear and to not roll back the progress that's been made thus far.
And also those Black businesses have to pay to be on those shelves. So that's more Black dollars going into Target as well. And that's something that a friend of mine pointed out, who's got quite a bit of experience in that retailing business. So how many cities are participating in this boycott?
Well, there are folks around the country that are participating in the boycott. We're constantly seeing folks online who are saying that they're not going to shop at Target. The boycott is indefinite as far as we're concerned, unless and until Target decides to reverse its rollback of diversity, equity, and inclusion. We have some national partners who have been helping to get the word out about this boycott. And we are seeing a lot of support here in Minnesota and across the country.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any way of knowing whether the boycott thus far, I know it's only been, 5 days since the boycott began, has it had an impact on Target's bottom line yet? And how would you determine how much of an impact it is having?
Well, folks have posted screenshots showing a decline in Target's stock value within the last week. They've kind of had some shaky, returns in terms of what their stock is looking like, but we have seen a decline since the boycott began. So we do believe that it's working in terms of the messaging around the boycott and people deciding not to go into Target stores. Some people have posted screenshots showing stores that were practically empty or parking lots that were half full. So we do believe that the boycott is working. And, although there are companies beyond Target that have decided to roll back their DEI commitments, we thought that it was important to start with one company, the company that essentially made itself the poster child for diversity, equity, and inclusion in the aftermath of a Black man being murdered by the police. And that way we can measure our progress over time. Okay. We will be able to tell what does Target's bottom line look like, in the midst of this boycott. And has Target learned its lesson that you cannot tell people of color that diversity, equity, and inclusion is important to you? And then the moment your feet are to the fire or you feel pressure from the Trump administration, you decide to cower under the weight of that pressure. We don't have the luxury of cowering when we have someone like Donald Trump who's in office. Because we know from many people in our community, it could be a matter of life and death with the programs that he is attempting to slash, that many people in our community rely upon, with the rhetoric that he's pushing forward, pretending that people of color are getting jobs that they're not qualified for, when all we need to do is look at the people that he's appointed and see that he has his own built-in affirmative action plan, as far as I'm concerned, where unqualified and underqualified white men sometimes other men of color are being placed in positions that they are not equipped to handle. And they are doing a lot of damage and potential damage as a result of being placed in those positions. So it's the ultimate hypocrisy for Donald Trump to do what he's doing in the White House while also acting as if the progress that's being made with diversity, equity, and inclusion is not acceptable. As if people, again, are not getting these positions based on merit. You have to be qualified to even get your foot in the door after submitting your resume. Mm-hmm. And what we're saying is we don't want special treatment. We want fair treatment. Okay. Because throughout the time that this country's been in existence, we know that white men and white women have received preferential treatment, with an emphasis on white men receiving preferential treatment.
Mm. So In recent years, the buying power of the Black community has risen significantly. According to a 2020 report via CNBC, Black buying power was at $1.4 trillion in 2019 and projected to grow by $1.8 trillion by 2024. That's a lot of purchasing power. And the community, the community is waking up to that reality and strategizing on ways to circulate those dollars back into the Black community rather than spend them at a Target or Walmart. Are you aware, Attorney, of any projects underway, owned and operated by Blacks, to house and showcase Black businesses? I know you spoke earlier of how you can go directly to their websites, but is there any creative idea? Are there any creative ideas out there that you know of to maybe develop a Black Target?
Of course, well, I've seen a couple things. So online, we have some Black influencers who have gathered information on the Black-owned businesses that are in Target, and they are circulating the names of those businesses as well as their websites as a tool, you know, to make it easy for people to be able to access those businesses and to buy from them. When I was in Atlanta in December for a visit, I was able to go to the mall that is modeled after Black Wall Street. And that mall in Atlanta features lots of Black-owned businesses, some of them operating at more of a grassroots level, but they have so many amazing things, artifacts and art, you know, and clothing, jewelry that are in alignment with our Black culture. And so that to me is an example of Black people using their self-determination to build their own institutions and infrastructures where we can go in and shop and allow our Black dollars to circulate through the community. Because what's happening right now is when we are just focused on these big box retailers, we don't have control of where our dollar goes once we, you know, swipe a card or pay cash at a cash register. But when you're buying local, you're buying Black, you're buying small, we know that there is a significantly higher likelihood that those dollars will circulate in the community. Black business owners are also more likely to hire Black people to work in their shops and restaurants and stores, right? Mm-hmm. And so this is a way for us to leverage our Black buying power, which you referenced earlier. I don't think enough of us think about that. You know, we're just focused on, hey, I got to get what I got to get, you know, when I got to get it, right? As opposed to us being more conscious and intentional with our dollars and leveraging our dollars to help address some of the underlying socioeconomic issues that we experience in our communities.
Absolutely. Well, now Walmart's, Lowe's, John Deere, McDonald's, and even the parent company of Facebook and Instagram, they've also decided to roll back theirs, but there's no call for a boycott for those companies. Or will there be?
Well, some people are already boycotting those companies. But I know as an organizer, people can get overwhelmed. If we put out a list with 5 to 10 companies on there, people will feel like there's nowhere for me to shop, you know, which dilutes the power of a boycott if it looks like things are all over the place, as opposed to having a concentrated target. And Target is the target in that regard. So if people want to privately boycott those companies, they can. And down the line, we may call out those other companies, but right now we are focused squarely on Target.
Okay, finally, this is Black History Month, and I just want to leave this thought. The Montgomery, Alabama bus boycott lasted 381 days and led to a U.S. Supreme Court ruling that the Montgomery and Alabama segregated bus laws were unconstitutional. So I want to thank our guest, Nakima Levy-Armstrong, attorney Nakima Levy-Armstrong, one of the founders of the Target Boycott. She's a lawyer and social justice activist. Thank you for joining us this morning on What's at Stake.
Thank you for having me.
And that completes this week's edition of What's at Stake. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer extraordinaire, Mike Nasella. Next week, we welcome our newest Second Wednesday host, the inimitable Reverend Mark Thompson. Be sure and join us. Up next, Wake Up and Stay Woke. And Katia Stitt will be sitting in this morning for Dr. E. Faye Williams, and we'll be talking about Black nature. Did I get that right? Taking nature back. Black. Stay tuned. I'm Verna Avery Brown, and in the words of the late, great Nelson Mandela, it always seems impossible until it's done. Ashe.
Georgetown University professor Maurice Jackson and NEA jazz master Willard Jenkins will interview each other about their books as well as sign them at 7 p.m. on Tuesday, February 11th at the Hill Center at 921 Pennsylvania Avenue Southeast. This is the third session of the series, Our City, Our Music, Our Writers. Details at hillcenterdc.org. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, asking you to support WPFW. We ask you, please, to go to the website and make a pledge, maybe $47 or $470 if you can, or $47 a month, to WPFW.org. Hey, if you want to get dinner and a show in New York, if you want to bring a guest with you, maybe your partner or daughter or son, a friend you want to meet up with in New York, watch the broadcast of Democracy Now! Live, 8 in the morning, sit on the set as we broadcast on over 1,000 stations, and then I get to personally host you for a meal, and we will toast WPFW, and it is an amazing time. We call it dinner and a show, you and your special guest. That's a $2,000 tax-deductible charitable contribution that goes directly to WPFW. Go online at WPFW.org. And by the way, you don't have to know when you can come to New York, where Democracy Now! Is based. Just make that call or go online at WPFW.org, make the pledge, and then we'll get in touch with you and work out the details. Maybe you're coming to New York soon or it won't be for a year. This doesn't expire because we don't want WPFW to expire. Again, go to WPFW.org. And thank you so much.
Climate Friday host Reverend Lennox Yearwood Jr. is but one of the Black voices in climate and environmental justice that will be featured at this year's Taking Nature Black Conference, March 5th through the 8th. Presented by Nature Forward and themed Reclamation and Resilience, with both online and in-person participation for connection, knowledge, inspiration, and more. Details about Taking Nature Black Conference at natureforward.org/takingnatureblack, all one word, Taking Nature Black. That's Taking Nature Black, Reclamation and Resilience, March 5th through the 8th. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Whether it's the courage to tell the truth about displacement, apartheid, and genocide, or our commitment to presenting jazz and all of its extensions, as well as other liberatory musical forms, blues, hip-hop, house, WPFW has been an unwavering partner in the fight for social justice and the preservation of the culture. Now's the time for you to display your courage and commitment to truly independent press by donating during our Winter Pledge Drive from February 9th through the 22nd. It is with your generous financial support that WPFW, this emancipatory educational media outlet, continues to build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
How to get WPFW swag in your life? Items that say, I support jazz and justice without saying a word. We've got you covered. Details and browsing at WPFWFM.org. Again, that's WPFWFM.org.
Hi, this is Jim Byers, host of the Latin Flavor Classic Edition. Support from listeners like you are the tools that have built WPFW over nearly five decades. We provide news, music worth listening to, and in-depth conversations about your community and the world. One of the many ways that you could contribute is to donate a vehicle that you no longer need, running or not. It can do wonders for WPFW, so donate it for a tax break for 2024. Go to WPFWFM.org or call 1-866-WPFW-CAR. That's 1-866-973-9227 for more information.